you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome. This is another episode of Elder Talk. This is Joe Cordell with Susan Arthur, my co-host. And today we're going to talk about a topic that I think will tie in with everyone listening. We make certain assumptions about our audience. We assume our audience is at least above 50. The majority of you, we assume, are above 60. So we try to address topics in this show that we think have real value to you and that hopefully are interesting in the presentation. I mean, some topics, Susan, lend themselves to being more interesting than others, granted.
That is true.
Yeah, sometimes there's just not a lot of sizzle when you're talking about durable powers of attorney or wills. I mean, how do you convert that into the sort of sexy topics that you commonly see on primetime television? You know, we'll never compete with those guys and win.
No, probably not. But it doesn't mean that these things aren't really, really important.
Much more important.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this week we're going to talk about the subject of control. Now, here's some things that I can bet that if you poll any congregation or gathering of older people and ask them, what are your priorities? Study after study has shown that there are three things that people consistently put at the top of their list. One is aging in place. Now, I'm assuming there's lots of nodding heads out there saying, yeah, I definitely would like to stay in the place that's become familiar to me. This is my home. I know this. I know my neighborhood. I know my church, and I can get around, and et cetera. Another thing that commonly occurs is, I don't want to be a burden on others. In other words, people are self-conscious about the possibility that they're going to burden their children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I hurry to tell my clients, and I hurry to tell you, don't worry about it, meaning that they owe you. And I tell my kids, I have two daughters in college, I tell them that I will feel no guilt about the fact that I will need them to help care for me in my older age, that will be their duty. And that for them to remember the many things that my wife and I have done for them and will continue to do up to that point. So I don't, maybe when I reach that point, I'll feel some of that.
Yeah.
But right now, I don't get it. But I know it's on the list.
Yep.
I know a lot of people out there are thinking, no, I don't want to be a burdensome. I don't want to interfere with their life. How much did they interfere in your life whenever they were growing up? I mean, that's my analysis.
Radically changed it. But I get where people are coming from, because you want your kids to be better than you and have more than you and live their life fuller, more fully than you. And I think that's where I don't want to be a burden.
Yeah, yeah. And I know it springs, as you point out, it springs from these noble feelings and mm-hmm. goals that people feel. And they always want the best for the kids. And they figure if that's a hassle for their kids and they shouldn't have to do it. So that's on the list. But here's what I really want to focus on is the third thing that appears over and over and over, and that's the issue of control. I want to have some autonomy, some self-autonomy, meaning the ability to make decisions about my life, to have some measure of control. Because if you think about it, what is it that distinguishes us as human beings,
mm-hmm.
as free people living in a free world, is our ability to make decisions. And once you take that away, then that's one of the core components that we regard as our independence and adulthood and our freedom,
mm-hmm.
which we enjoy here. But, you know, the bottom line is that control is a difficult thing to keep as we age and lose some of the abilities we had for many years. Now, some people may not. There are a number of people listening here who they'll be fully functional until the hour and moment that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's a lot to be said for that. But I have to say that many of us know, I mean, in many ways, technology and progress and medical procedures and all those things that we have enjoyed the fruits of in the last 20 years in particular, but certainly over the last 50, 75, 100 years, allows us to live longer, but not necessarily in the condition that we want to be in.
That's right. And I think that's what a lot of people really struggle with, is that we are living longer, but because we're living longer, often we need more help.
So I think it makes sense for us to take some time here and talk about what are the things we need to do if we want to maximize our control over our lives and be as much in control as possible for the balance of our lives? What is a plan? Some people, I realize, will not bother thinking about a plan. But I think that many of you who listen to the show, you do think about that. And you wonder, what should I have in place? And I'm going to suggest kind of a backstop as well as a primary plan. In other words, a primary and a secondary. So the backstop, I think, we need to be clear about. We need to be clear that there are certain, pardon the phrase, documents that need to be in place. And you may not regard these as plan A, but there needs to be a plan B.
Right.
Because things happen. Strokes happen. Mm-hmm. Car accidents. Other, you know, incidents occur that suddenly deliver us from a moment in which we're in one condition to a moment in which we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly we're very dependent. So,
I think that's the key. It can happen suddenly. We forget that. We always think we're going to have time, and we really do not always have time.
And it's amazing how those things come so fast. Talk to somebody. Some of our audience, of course, is saying, yeah, I know. I've been there and seen that. Others haven't. But if you haven't, talk to somebody who's had a situation where a family member has had a heart attack or a stroke or some, you know, catastrophic event where just in a moment's time almost, they go from this independent lifestyle to one in which everything's changed suddenly. And it also means that if there wasn't a plan in place, suddenly everyone's scrambling,
mm-hmm.
meaning it's not them typically because they're disabled at that point. And so it's family members and others who are struggling to fix the situation. So let's think then first, we'll talk about plan B and then we'll go to plan A. And incidentally, there's nothing wrong with having a plan C and D, but we'll assume at least a plan A and B. So the fallback plan, as we might call it, would be one in which something like this happens, where it could be sudden, it could be unexpected. So you want to be sure that you have a mechanism in place that takes care of things. The easiest way to do that, without question, is a durable power of attorney. And many of you are familiar with this document. I've talked about it before, but bear with me. I won't spend much time with it here, but I wanted to dwell on it for just a second because it's so important. And quite frankly, it's very affordable. You can go to your lawyer, hopefully a lawyer who specializes, or in Missouri, incidentally, you're not supposed to use the word specialize. A lawyer who limits and focuses their practice on elder law, preferably, secondarily estate planning. But you need to go to a lawyer who understands these. But the bottom line is, whoever you go to, it shouldn't cost you much to get this.
What's a range? I mean, when you say not much.
Well, I mean, you can go from zero, meaning there's a form you can order online. Would I say the form's better than nothing? Yes.
Okay.
Without a question, the form's better than nothing. So you go from zero to, I don't know, a customized document where you sit down with your lawyer and you talk about, well, if this happens, I'd want this person in charge. If these change, I want this person, or I want them to share this authority. Often, you know, people will want their children to participate maybe jointly.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they will want to limit certain areas that they'll say, well, this person that I give this power to, I don't want them to have the keys to virtually everything in my life. I want to sequester this area over here, such as, for example, my estate planning. I don't want them to be able to touch the estate planning. I don't want them to be able to change it in any way. Others will say, well, there's certain other things I don't want them to be able to do. I don't want them to be able to give stuff away. And that's commonly a provision that whoever holds this power cannot exchange things for no value in return.
Hmm.
Now, there's an argument against that. It does limit estate planning. But in answer to your question, so sometimes people will want something that is more thoughtful, more reflective of their goals. And maybe they can spend a couple $100, maybe $300, and that's for having a lawyer's time for several hours.
That's really not very much money.
And not at all. And you're right. And it's easy. Some people say, well, lawyers can easily say that, but it's not much in the scheme of things.
In the scheme of, exactly. I mean, so that you have the peace of mind and the safety and just knowing that this can be taken care of in the event you are disabled, that seems like a great investment.
So remember, the plan B or your fallback position, the net, we'll call it. Imagine you're kind of walking this high wire to some extent and you think of the net below you. So the net should definitely include a durable power of attorney. The net should also include some sort of advanced care directive. We've talked about this before. Again, this show is not to be dedicated to these documents, but I want to mention them because I think that the more that for people who haven't done it, the more they hear it, maybe it'll trigger them to act. These things, again, are not expensive. This isn't either. Whether it's called a living will, some of you are familiar with it by that name. Some of you are familiar with the phrase durable power of attorney for health care. Some will hear the more generic phrase, a advanced care directive. But
and they're all the same thing.
They're not the same thing.
Okay.
But they, in different ways, accomplish the same thing. And I don't want to make this so complicated in explaining these distinctions that people just walk away from the subject. If you simply have a living will, then that's wonderful. It's not as good as if you have a living will in addition to a durable power of attorney for health care. But the bottom line is you should have in place something that addresses these things. And I'm thinking about your question a moment ago, Susan. You know, what's the range of possibilities? And yeah, we go from zero, meaning there are forms out there you can order, and forms better than nothing, to something where you may spend several hundred bucks for. But again, similar to the durable power of attorney, is that some people like to go in specific detail regarding these things. There are some aspects of care they want and some they don't want. They may have strong feelings about discontinuation of antibiotics, discontinuation of artificial nutrition, hydration, analgesic, which is pain medication. Some want to go ahead and take the opportunity in this document to prepare what's called a final care plan or a life care directive, in which they may state the things that they really care about. That's the place where they can say, look, if I'm not competent, but maybe I'm otherwise functional physically. I mean, we all know that there are facilities that exist for people who are kind of mentally impaired in this way due to aging. So if I'm in that situation, here are the things that I want. This is I want to go to church services on Sunday if I'm physically able. I want to spend time outside, weather permitting.
Hmm.
If the weather's appropriate, I like to spend a couple hours sitting outside each day. These are the things I like to eat. These are the things I don't care for. This is the music I care for. Because remember, this is, you're living potentially, I don't want to sound this, make this sound too dreary, but you're kind of living in this room potentially and probably in a facility. So under those circumstances, and let's assume they're remote, none of us want to end up there.
Right.
But the bottom line is the circumstances may not exist to trigger those provisions, such as in a living will, where they don't do resuscitation, maybe even the nutrition, hydration things. All those provisions are triggered really in the last stages of life when there's no medical hope of recovery whatsoever. That's when those things are triggered. What if they're not triggered and you're in this very dependent position where you cannot adequately communicate what's important to you? You know, this is the place where you can do that. So would you want to spend maybe several hundred bucks on this document to address those things in a way that a form doesn't? And I think that everyone, if they think about a moment, the answer to that is yes.
Right.
So I think the reason people don't do it is not because they don't want to spend the several hundred bucks. I think it's because they just don't get around to it.
Right.
Or they figure it's not going to be me.
It's not going to be me. Or I don't even want to think about it. I mean, sometimes you were talking and I thought, you know, I can see in my head some people going, la, 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 la. I'm not listening because this is not going to happen. And so we hope not. We never know. But only God knows the future. And we need to make plans and prepare.
And that's the point, is we do have a duty to prepare. I mean, that's stewardship. And because it impacts other things, too, not just how we feel, but it impacts other areas of our life. So whenever we think about the plan B, the backstop, the net, if you want to call it, you know, these core components, they just got to be there. I mean, before you move on to how am I going to manage my life, these things have got to be in place. So durable power of attorney for health care, living will, whatever you want to call it, then the durable power of attorney. And then finally, although less emphatically, is I think that you should have probably some sort of trust. But a will will do. A will will do for some of you, and I'm not going to get into that discussion here again either. But I just want to describe what I think are the things that need to be in place most critically. And these events, incidentally, if it's in the form of a trust, can kind of rush in to start managing things for you in the same way that a durable power of attorney can. I won't go into distinguishing those, but as I've talked before on the show, and I'm sure we'll talk again, you know, they can serve very interactive purposes so that they can kind of work together in a synchronous sort of way. So what have I mentioned? We've mentioned the durable power of attorney. We've mentioned the durable power of attorney for health care. And we've mentioned maybe the will/trust. So these, I think, are the most important ingredients to a backstop that you need to have. This is the plan you don't prefer, but you want in place in the event that all else fails. So now let's shift gears for a minute and let's talk about, you know, autonomy. You know, that's one of those core things we care about. as human beings, we want to have it throughout our lives. But in order to have it, you know, we have to have certain capabilities. And to the extent those diminish, then we have to bring in some sort of partnership, some sort of cooperative arrangement with a third party or an additional person that can sort of prop up you as you continue to maximize your role in your life. And maybe that's a good way to express it is, we want maximum participation. And maximum participation means that the participation that is possible for you medically, to medically, personally, physically, to withstand and to administer effectively. And to the extent that the rest of those responsibilities you can't do, then you need some sort of relationship. And we'll talk about those possibilities. But let's first talk about kind of what autonomy looks like before we bring in those resources. It means the ability to pay bills. You know, we have to be able to take care of those monthly expenses associated with independent living. Mm-hmm. It means that we probably have some sort of residence. Many of you at these stages would be talking about the house that you presently live in. Some, you know, will have moved to apartments. But we're still talking about self-sufficiency, where you are managing the things on your behalf. So if you're in a house, for example, that means there's stuff that needs to be done. There needs to be some arrangement by which you can assure that all that upkeep and maintenance issues are done, including, incidentally, on the interior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, often you'll go into the homes of people as they age, and they don't notice that these things are piling up.
Right.
And that there's dust, or that there's not the high cleanliness mm-hmm. that they would have insisted on just 20 years earlier.
Mm-hmm. That's how, I'll be honest, the true story, that's how I knew that things were really starting to decline with my grandmother, is I remember walking in and going, this bathroom is dirty. And it would have never been that way. And I was probably in college or a little bit past college at the time and thought, wow, this really is happening. And that what you said is so true. It really does happen. And she just did not see it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably one of those reliable red flags
mm-hmm.
that you know before an incident or something happens that there's just not the capability.
Mm-hmm.
So independent living means the ability to keep up those sorts of things, interior and exterior.
Well, and not to mention maintenance of just yard work and outside maintenance and, you know, making sure that there's no damage or seals around the windows and things like that. I mean, some of that is just, it can become overwhelming for all of us, let alone if you're not someone who's physically able to do some of the repairs.
And the point is that you wouldn't notice it. It very easily it would escape your notice until mm-hmm. serious damage has happened. And if you don't have someone who's coming around who you trust to help point those things out to you, then it's difficult to continue owning a home. And that may not be the right arrangement for you going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're describing independent living, we'll use that phrase not in the sense that facilities use that phrase, but we mean it in the generic sense of the word, the ability to live independently. We have to have the capability of keeping up the interior and the exterior of wherever we live, unless there's another way that's being handled. We have to be able to take care of bills and expenses. We have to be able to shop.
Hmm.
We have to be able to travel to places, to and fro, whatever that might be, church, doctor's appointments, those various places we need to go. We need to be capable of transporting ourselves, or we must have some sort of mass transit or alternative option that's available to us. You know, when you think about what all needs to be in place for us to live truly independently, then, you know, there can be a lot involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we take that for granted when we're younger because it's so easy to do. But as we get older, you know, that looks like a chore. I mean, getting in the car, figuring out, you know, where I'm going to park when I get there, having to get on the expressway, all that's involved there. Even getting to doctor's appointments at places that you're not familiar with. Now, when you're my daughter's age, you whip out your phone.
Yep.
And in moments, the phone is talking to you, telling you where to go. And, you know, our kids can't imagine any other world because that's what they grew up with.
Oh, exactly.
So, but when you're when you're 80 years old, for example, and things are often more difficult at 80 than they are at 50 in many ways. So suddenly they're going to a new doctor. Mm-hmm. They're going to a new destination for whatever purpose that might be. And they have to have the challenge of getting there. That's all part of independent living.
Well, and it's not even uncommon for someone in their late 70s, 80s, and beyond to have mobility issues. And even if they're able to still drive, they're not able to walk very far. And so you've got to look at handicap parking and getting the handicap stickers and how do you get there and, you know, is there parking close to where I'm needing to go? How much am I going to have to walk? Is there a scooter available? I mean, all of those types of things. As a young person, you just never think about.
Yeah, and all of us, though, want to live independently, mm-hmm. but we do. You're right. We take these things for granted. So what we want to talk about is, you know, what are the ways in which we can help facilitate living independently, and then what are the alternatives to that? And we'll discuss kind of what those most common solutions are, and we'll discuss some of the challenges, the advantages and disadvantages of each during the time we have left. So this is Elder Talk. Joe Cordell. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney, CPA, Joe Cordell.
And we're back with Elder Talk. My name's Joe Cordell, and my co-host, Susan Arthur. We're talking about the subject of maintaining control. We know that as we age, we want to manage our lives like we have since our adulthood. Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, since we've wanted to do since we were born, right? That's our nature. But it becomes more difficult as we age, and more for some than others. So we want to talk about what should be a plan so that we maximize the probability that we'll be able to have as much control as possible to maximize the autonomy that we have in our lives. Now, we want to prepare for the possibility that we'll need to rely on additional resources as we go along, some of us more than others. We don't know who's who. So we develop plans and contingency plans. And our fallback position we've already talked about is to have in place some key documents or key resources. That's a better way to think about it. Don't think of them as pieces of paper. Think of them as these hugely helpful resources. Now, what about, though, plan A? What do we want to happen? And we discussed before we went into the break the fact that this is what living independently looks like. We described the obligation to make payments, to maintain a place where we live on the interior, and if it's a house, on the exterior, and how easily those things can slip and how it can not be noticeable often to us until our younger nephews, grandchildren, children come and visit and notice that things are accumulating, they're dusty, they're not clean the way they know we would normally have wanted things. What are the other responsibilities we have in living independently? Well, transportation. We have to go to places for various reasons, so we need to be able to have a means to get there. What else does it look like? Susan, when I'm thinking about the list of things that we need to be able to do, pay bills,
provide for your needs such as shopping, having the resources to pay for that,
grocery shopping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a huge thing when someone starts to either not be able to get out on their own. I mean, there are some transportation companies, but just getting food, regular grocery shopping, I think is a big thing. To and from church, to and from the doctor's appointments, all of those things are very important.
Yeah. And we can't forget, what about management of money? Mm-hmm. Meaning that we need to have in place some means by which the assets we do have are properly managed. Management may consist of simply allowing funds to sit in a particular account or an investment until such time as you write a check or otherwise need to withdraw them. So that's not uncommon. But when you think about this cluster of activities that to some extent are all areas that have to be addressed in everyone's life. Now the question becomes, how do you do that? Well, let's first talk about maintaining your independence where you are now. Right now, you're taking care of those things, we're assuming. What happens, though, when just in small degrees you can't address some of those? How do we provide for the sort of resources we need to step in, but step in only to the extent we need to address these things? Remember, plan A, we're assuming, consists of your desire to maximize your role. Now, often what happens is there's some slippage in some of these areas, whether it's transportation related, whether it's maintenance of the place that you live, maybe the ability to pay bills. Maybe there's some slippage in these areas, and all of a sudden our well-intentioned loved ones rush in with a solution that wipes away a lot more of your self-sufficiency than is necessary.
Yeah, an example I'm thinking of is, let's say as your body's breaking down, your eyes get bad. And so maybe you're no longer quite able to drive. Maybe your eyesight prohibits maybe writing checks and that small print. That's not necessarily the time for the durable power of attorney to kick in, but there's mm-hmm. got to be something in between. And so that's what I think we're looking at now, is what are some of those little steps that we can do where, you're right, maybe there's just a little bit of slipping. Things aren't quite the way they used to be, but what do we do next?
Yeah, and one way that's helpful to think about it is, let's think of it as a continuum. I mean, people know what I mean when I say continuum, meaning it consists of a sort of bar, if you've seen these illustrations, and we'll assume it goes from left to right. And if it's all the way to the left, then it's zero, meaning the assistance of others. So we'll call full autonomy, self-sufficiency, where you're running your own life, we'll call that zero intervention or assistance by others. And then the other extreme of the continuum is 100%. We'll call that living in a skilled care facility where everything is done for you. You have no responsibilities, period, except to eat the food that's presented to you, and pretty much that's it.
That's about it. You typically get up when they want you to, and things like that.
So the whole idea, my operating assumption, we started out the show, we talked about the fact that what are these core values that just seem to be almost unanimously important to people as they age. And we said that one of those is self-sufficiency. So let's assume on this continuum that we want to maximize the intervention. We want to minimize the intervention and maximize our self-sufficiency. So that's a continuum in which, you know, those resources are as low as possible. But what often happens is that when we see that we're slipping, whether it's with respect to household matters, whether it's respect to our ability to drive, maybe as you point out, it could be eye issues where that limits the ability to drive and maybe the ability to do some other things. So all of a sudden, with this well-intentioned loved one, this continuum where you had zero intervention by others suddenly goes from zero to 60% or 70% or 80%. And that may happen, for example, where you're having some problems with transportation, or maybe you've had some eye issues that affect that and some other things. And so, you know, are your children well-intentioned? They come in and say, Mom, you know, really what you need is there's this assisted care facility, and they provide transportation. You don't have any upkeep responsibilities, and they're either your financial planner can suddenly take over, or we can provide for that, in which you won't have to manage any of your bills. So suddenly you go, because of a small reduction in your capabilities, suddenly you've gone from zero management by others to 60% or more. And that wasn't necessary. Now, if you wanted that, I mean, if you're one of those people that says, yes, take me to 60%, give me to 70 or 80%.
I don't want to think about it anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to do any of this stuff. I just want to get up in the morning and be able to eat and decide where I want to go that day and have no responsibilities. So some people, I realize, are listening to this and thinking, that doesn't sound so bad. But I know, based on all these studies I've read and many rooms full of people I've talked to who are older, and I know that most of you don't want to move that fast along that continuum. You want to move as far as you have to in terms of others providing care or managing your lives. So what was really necessary? Could that person who is at zero, they're fully independent now because of these challenges, was there a solution that would involve maybe a 5 or 10% movement on this continuum? I'm using this tool to sort of illustrate a point, and I think that you get it, is what could we have done in a more limited way that would have fixed the problem? Mm-hmm. Could it have been that if maintenance of a house, for example, is a big deal, and that may be one of the challenges that people notice when they come to the house, they see things that are not being done correctly. Maybe the solution isn't to take you all the way to a managed care facility.
Right.
Maybe instead the solution is to move you to an apartment.
Right.
And maybe if it's an eyesight issue too, maybe it's to move you to an apartment in which you can walk and don't have to drive to these places that are nearby, grocery shopping, a more urban area where there's, or at least an area where in the neighborhood there are these places that are easily accessible. Let me suggest to you.
Or to set you up for home delivery for groceries. I mean, these days now there's all kinds of options where maybe you have a cleaning service come in and that takes care of some of the issues with your house and you have groceries delivered. Think outside the box.
That is a great illustration. I mean, think of the ways in which that would be minimal movement in terms of along that line of other people managing your lives. That is a solution where you maximize your management of your life. And so our point here in this discussion is, do you want to leap across all those possibilities in between and jump to a solution that, you know, is kind of a blunt instrument, meaning it's by no means precision, it's not surgical, it's an instrument that just wipes out all those problems, but in addition wipes out a lot of your independence. It's unimaginative, but those solutions often come to the minds of the best intentioned among us when they think of solving our problems. But it's a solution that does much more than solve that problem. It takes away a lot of your independence.
Well, and I think sometimes what happens is the kids, they come in and they know, okay, mom's maybe not going to, this isn't going to get better. She's going to continue to age. And so she's going to continue to maybe fail or to have issues. So I think, like as you said, people are well-intentioned and they think, okay, this is going to be the least amount of disruption. It'll be a lot right now, but then it'll be less. Well, maybe, you know, maybe that is the right thing, but maybe it's not. And I think that's what we're talking about today is what about, you know, are there incremental steps that you can make along the way that will keep you living independently without making a huge leap?
Yeah, and that's another way to express it is incremental steps. And our point is there are almost, not always, depending on you know, some crises, there may not be anything incremental in between. You go from zero to 90 and on this in this example of a continuum. But in the vast majority of cases, yes, there are. There are incremental steps. It's just that all too often they're ignored. Not, again, people are not insensitive to your needs. And you yourself, you know, would like to do the best, but maybe you yourself are not in a position to think well about this, at least at the time that you need to think your best about it. So I think people, often our loved ones, our children, are busy. They're doing other things. Some of them are raising their own kids. They're distracted. Maybe they lack the knowledge to suggest these alternatives. There are lots of reasons that people go lose so much more of their self-sufficiency than they need to, and yet people had the best of intentions. So we want to equip you as listeners to this radio show. We want to equip you to be able to assure that you maximize your role, your independence in the balance of your life. And we know there will come times when you'll have to surrender swaths of it, much larger portions of it than you would like. So be it when that time comes. But in the meantime, why surrender those areas when you don't need to? And let's go back to the example we were just talking about. You gave some wonderful solutions, Susan, is that think about the problem where suddenly you can't drive or for other reasons, maybe you have visual problems, maybe you have other mobility issues. How do you solve that problem? And we just mentioned a few of them. And imagine the many that we're not thinking of. Susan pointed out that now you can have a service come and clean your house. That solves a big problem. You can have a service that does the exterior. That solves a big problem. You can have food delivered. Wow, what? I mean, this is technology at work. And it doesn't mean, incidentally, that you need to be able to go on Amazon and make these selections. It means you need to make arrangements for that to be done. But maybe if your children don't think of these solutions, maybe you could call to their attention, and then they could help you arrange to have these things done.
Right. I know at least I know Deerberg's and Schnucks will both offer delivery. Walmart has a delivery service where all you have to do is you can order it online, you pull up, they bring it out to your car. I mean, that's nice and simple. That even you can do that and one of your kids could pick it up. I mean, we're not saying to avoid using family, and family is out there to help, but sometimes there are just some ways that we can make it a little easier for everybody.
Yeah, and we mentioned also the possibility that sometimes it makes a lot of sense to move out of the house. Don't move all the way into a managed care facility. Move into an apartment, perhaps. Again, for some of you, this won't be the answer, but for some of you, it is. But remember, what you're doing by moving into the apartment versus moving into something where it's an assisted living facility, for example, is that you are moving as little as possible along that line in terms of other people managing your life, losing autonomy.
And you're saving some resources. I mean, an assisted living apartment is going to be much more expensive than either a condo or just a regular apartment where you don't have any maintenance or outside responsibilities.
Yeah, and now let's figure, though, that you pay for some of these things you and I were just talking about. You pay for people to come do housekeeping. You pay for people to do exterior. You might pay a little extra for delivery of groceries. But when you put those additional costs against the costs, as you point out, of an assisted care facility, that should be an easy decision. And are there other advantages that accrue to you by having a philosophy or taking a position that I'm going to move as little along that line of surrender of my independence as possible? That's going to be my guiding criterion along the way. If that becomes your sort of North Star as to how you make decisions along the way, then other advantages will accrue to you. Among them, I'm convinced, is that you lose your skills at a much slower rate when you're challenged, when you have to get up each day and make decisions that you don't have to make when you decide to move into certain types of facilities. I mean, there could be advantages to your health and your longevity and your mental capabilities that will accrue to you by choosing to move as slowly along that line of loss of self-sufficiency as possible at each turn.
There are studies after study after study that talk about keeping busy and keeping active, keeping mentally sharp, and how that improves your quality of life. And I think that's what we're all really trying to do, is we want to have quality of life. I mean, it's great to live longer, but it really stinks to live longer and be miserable. And so if we can have good quality of life by keeping active, keeping control of our lives, maybe you'd like to cook. Go ahead and keep cooking. Cook Christmas cookies for the neighbors. Do those types of things that you can at least enjoy and that you can still do. And then I think we're all going to be better off.
Yeah. And it is a commitment, because mm-hmm. as you point out that, you know, sometimes it's tempting to not cook, even mm-hmm. though you normally enjoy it, but you may decide that, well, maybe this is one of those things that I need to give up. Often to stretch and do those things as they become more challenging mm-hmm. is important, though they're harder than they used to be. Mm-hmm. Many of those things are harder than they used to be.
Well, taking a walk. I mean, a lot of times people will struggle with just getting out and taking a walk. So maybe you don't go as far as you used to. Maybe you get out and you walk to the mailbox. I mean, I've known some people that is a challenge, to just get up and walk to the mailbox. But I've also known people who have gotten in their car to drive to the mailbox. And it's like, okay, maybe just walk those few extra things. Maybe you'll feel better to do something else the next day or something along those lines.
So in the few minutes that are available to us, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about what is it that is in this toolbox of solutions to allow us to maintain, to maximize our independence for the balance of our lives. Back in a moment. This is Elder Talk, Joe Cordell.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors, presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Okay, we're back with Elder Talk. Before we went in the break, we were talking about our objective, which is to maximize your independence for the balance of your lives. But we decided that, you know, that requires us thinking a little creatively, or at least having people around us who are prepared to do that, so that we can figure out ways to accomplish that. And often there are ways that might not otherwise be considered. And Susan, you pointed out several of them, and I did before we went into the break. So let's take the time that's left in the show and sort of talk about some of these solutions that might exist in this toolbox. We talked about a few, but let's talk about some major items that people need to consider before they take steps that will dramatically reduce their independence when it's not necessary. We know some of you will choose that because you want it, but we're encouraging many of you to resist the simplicity of that solution. And it's tempting on those days when you feel bad that you don't want to get up and have any of those responsibilities. We're suggesting that it might be best for you to resist that temptation, resist those moods, and expend the effort to maximize your independence. So the toolbox, you know, we'd have to include family.
Mm-hmm.
Family resources. I mean, it's wonderful if you have people nearby who are prepared, loved ones who are prepared to support you in this decision. Rather than saying to you, Mom, Dad, you need to just move into this assisted care facility. It's down the street and they'll take care of all this for you.
I think it's a great idea to have family around because they can help. Maybe you need help with managing medications. I see a lot of family members that go each week and they get all of the medicines into the right pill box and the right dispenser so that they know exactly what to take when. Maybe it's, you know, a daily phone call. Maybe it's something like that. Just checking in, just need to touch base with you, realizing that there are some challenges, but yet family is still kind of there to help support you through it.
Yeah, yeah. And there's so many ways that we can do that. I mean, they may run errands for you. They may do certain things to help you out. And these can allow you to continue living independently for much longer than you otherwise would. Now, again, another example of a solution that could be too much and as a result, you know, not consistent with your goals of maximizing independence is sometimes families with the best of intentions, it will say, maybe you should move in with us. Incidentally, we should be grateful if we have kids in this day and age that say, Mom and Dad, we want you to come live with us and we really mean it.
Mm-hmm.
That is a blessing.
I was just going to say, that's a blessing that you have that good of a relationship.
Yeah, and it's reflective of the fact that, unfortunately, that's not that common today, unlike what was the norm a couple hundred years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So while you should be very appreciative of that, and in fact, it's possible you should say, yes, come get me now. But there are other times when you need to maybe resist that, tempting though it may be. Is that going to be the solution that maximizes your independence? Is it going to keep you at your best? And it may be that it will.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to by any means appear to suggest that that's not a desirable solution. For many people, it is. But again, as long as you're thinking about all of these decisions from the perspective that it's probably best for you in the long run to maximize your independence. So always ask yourself at each turn when you're facing these decisions, is this going to be the solution that allows me to stay as independent as long as possible? And sometimes it won't be. Sometimes it'll be that, no, I think I can stay and I can move to an apartment or I can stay here. And the way I can stay here is by having in place this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
So what other resources? Regarding financial management, some of you have financial advisors. And financial advisors are no longer something that just rich people have. Many people listening to me today who are middle class, they never earned a whole lot of money by many people's standards, and yet they have an advisor in their church often or somebody else. It may be sometimes it's more like a investment manager than a financial advisor, and those are a little two different things. An investment manager is really somebody who's often a broker, and they get a commission for just investing the money. And on the side, they'll give advice about personal finances and other things. A financial advisor is someone who's first and foremost committed to your financial picture, meaning all those things relating to your financial circumstances, and who, among other things, might comment on investments. And it's possible they may get a percentage related to investment. But financial advisors are first and foremost somebody who can talk to you about your insurance needs. Are those things in place? Health care? Are there in place the sort of resources we need for that? What about, you know, your basic legal planning? You know, they're the people who will address that circle of issues that need the attention of someone. And while often the financial planner is not the one who has the expertise in several of those areas, they at least recognize the fundamentals.
Would they be the one then that would maybe look at IRA contributions or disbursements and any pension benefits that you might have and that kind of thing? So they're the ones that can kind of help guide you along the path as to what's available for your future.
Yeah. And often they can comment related to that on tax matters. But a CFP, which is a certified financial planner,
mm-hmm.
I have a lot of respect for that designation. I know what goes into qualifying for that. And it's a multi-day test that's very demanding in terms of the content, requires familiarity with a broad array of subjects, insurance, financial management, taxes, employee benefits, et cetera. So many of you will have on your team or have a relationship with somebody who may be a financial planner, and this can be a resource. This can be something, a component of your plan that allows you self-sufficiency longer. And I mentioned this also to say that sometimes such people will provide a service where they will take over paying of bills. Now, this varies. It varies wildly from one institution to another, from one advisor to another. I can tell you that the trend now is a service that was at one time available more to the rich is now becoming available to the middle class, and that's one where institutional investors or financial management companies will make available the opportunity to pay your bills. They'll take care of all those things for you. Often they'll do that for maybe a charge of 1% of your total. It's not unusual. And again, these are people with substantially less than $1 million in assets. Now, again, not all of them do it. You need to check into it. But more and more now are recognizing that in this middle market, say people, including all your assets, you have, I don't know, 400,000 to a million. And for people in that range, I know to many of the people listening might be in that range, you know, there are resources now available to you that wouldn't have been available 10, 15, 20 years ago, where companies for a percentage fee, and I mentioned 1%, be sure and ask this question. It could vary, but I'm suggesting to you without telling you, I'm suggesting to you that maybe the idea of paying 1% is not a bad idea. And when you think about someone in exchange for that, taking care of the responsibilities of paying your bills for you, that's a good thing, and it may be a more reliable solution than having, you know, such as your son or daughter do that, and it's less of a burden on them. So my point in mentioning this and other things is that now institutional financial managers, brokerage firms, et cetera, are offering services that are intended to include their middle-class clients and to provide resources that allow you to live longer, be more self-sufficient longer than you otherwise could. Because often these issues are sometimes the first things that create a sort of crisis.
Well, and I think that's right. That's where often the crisis is seen. I mean, sometimes a child has no idea that mom is having issues or dad is having issues. And all of a sudden it's like, well, you're getting late fees and you're not paying bills and that,
or you get a foreclosure notice.
Exactly, or you know, they're going to turn off my water. What? Oh, I forgot to pay the bill a bunch. You know that. I mean, I've seen it happen.
Yeah, that is. And so the nice thing about it is that this is an example of how there are very targeted solutions that do not require your wholesale surrender of your independence. That less thoughtful solutions, such as moving in with someone else who takes over management of your life in more areas than is necessary.
And I think one thing that we're talking about is there are options out there that were not available, and it's good idea to investigate them, think outside the box, try to be a little bit proactive with what is out there, and in the long run, it will really be beneficial to you.
And let me suggest that there is a professional that, you know, we should have this as a person as a guest on the show. Let's get, and we've had before somebody who's in a profession similar to a geriatric care manager. This phrase has changed. Now I think there's a new title for the profession. But a geriatric care manager, someone who often has a nursing background or who is a social worker, and they're dedicated to helping in this 360-degree way, helping people maximize their independence and to help them come up with solutions to the specific issues that we've been talking about here and others. And they're the person who, as I think about who is it that would help people sit down and think about each of these very different areas. And, oh, what might be a solution to this? And, oh, what might be a solution to this? Mm-hmm. And those answers could be very different and involve very different subjects. And so the financial planner might have that sort of diversity of experience and talent. A geriatric care manager is really intended to be that person. They don't know the details of financial management. What they know is that people, as they age, need care in these certain areas, and these are the solutions that's available. And then they know enough to direct you and to present possibilities to you. So let me kind of summarize here as we're running out of time. So as we talk about the geriatric care manager, and we talk about other resources, our goal in this show is to encourage you to live as independently as you can for as long as you can. And I know that that's many of your objectives already, and hopefully this show has inspired you to believe that you can probably live a lot more independently for a lot longer than perhaps you thought, but it might require thinking a little creatively. Till next time, this has been another episode of Elder Talk.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.